Today on Family Talk.
I said to him, Lord, if you let me live, I want my life to be worth something. I want to do something that furthers your kingdom. I want to help people in the world. So just break my heart for whatever breaks your heart. And I just became so brokenhearted and just couldn't stop thinking about, couldn't stop praying for the women and the babies of China who were being forcibly aborted.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and as you just heard, our guest today here on the program has devoted her life to fighting gendercide in China. This is a powerful message, but as you can guess, it really isn't suitable for younger listeners. So you might want to distract them now or listen to the program later on the podcast section of our webpage. With that, here's Dr. Dobson now to introduce the show and to find out more about the ongoing gendercide in China. That's right here on Family Talk.
We hear so much about women's rights around the globe, and all of us should be concerned about the abuses that are taking place in third world countries and elsewhere. What we hear about in the press, however, is not the complete story. Our guest today is going to open our eyes to what's going on in China and India and other places, and there are precious voices that we need to hear through the leadership of our guest. She is Reggie Littlejohn, who is founder and president of an organization called Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Her credentials are impeccable. I'm going to take a minute to describe them because it's important to understand the work that she does. She graduated from Yale University Law School. She has spoken at Harvard and Stanford Law Schools, as well as Johns Hopkins and George Washington Universities. She has testified 7 times to the United States Congress and 3 times, probably more, at the European Parliament and the British and Canadian Parliaments. She has briefed at the White House and the U.S. State Department and the United Nations, and on it goes. The honors and awards that she has received would take the rest of the program to list. So I'm pleased, very, very pleased and honored to have Reggie Littlejohn with us today. Reggie, thank you so much for all you do for women, for unborn children, for children generally, and for the cause of the kingdom. You really feel this is a calling, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Dobson. I feel very much that this is a calling. And you know, Women's Rights Without Frontiers is not a religious organization, but I do feel comfortable talking about my own faith when asked on a personal basis. What we do is we are advocating for the lives and the dignity of the women and the babies of China. We're doing everything we can to help give a voice to the voiceless, because what people don't know is that women in China and babies in China are being forcibly aborted right now, and that girls are being sex selectively aborted as well.
You know, the propaganda we hear is that China has changed that one-child policy and that that no longer exists, but it does.
Right. This is propaganda. So the truth is that China has changed from a one-child policy to a two-child policy. But the way that that was announced was very misleading. The Chinese Communist Party used the word that they had abandoned the one-child policy, and that was picked up by the mainstream media and gave the impression that they have abandoned coercive birth control, coercive population control in China, which is not true. What is true is that instead of forcibly aborting people after one child, now they're forcibly aborting people after 2 children. And just over this past summer, we had several cases of late-term forced abortions of 3rd children in China. So coercive population control in China remains under the 2-child policy.
Explain what is behind the approval to have a child, that there is a certificate that's required.
Yeah, the birth permit is something that is sporadically enforced in China, both in terms of time and space. In other words, at different times, it's been more required to have the actual physical permit than other times. And in different places, sometimes it's required, sometimes it's not required. China says that they've done away with birth permits, but we have seen reports coming out of China of people running into problems because they didn't have a birth permit.
You know, from an American point of view and the freedom we hold so dear, I cannot imagine having to ask the government if we can have a baby, even a first baby, right?
Right. So this is the thing. Even in areas where the birth permit physically is not required, nevertheless, you still have to have permission to have a baby. You have to be married to have a baby in China. If you are not married, you have an illegal pregnancy and you have an illegal child. Most of those women, I believe, are forcibly aborted. Sometimes women are given a choice to pay a fine, but these fines can be up to 10 times a person's annual salary. And so the vast majority of people cannot afford to pay these fines, and then they end up with a choice. The only choice is to have an abortion.
So it's a de facto forced abortion.
Right. So the government will say, if you can't pay a fine, you must abort. And so some women choose to walk into the abortion clinic by their own 2 feet as opposed to being dragged out. And then the government will say, well, that was an elective abortion. Well, it wasn't an elective abortion. The only choice the woman had is, I can either have this abortion by walking in on my own 2 feet, or I can have this abortion by being dragged in. That was the choice, but it was not an elective abortion. It was a forced abortion.
What happens to a child who's born illegally to not only the parents, but the child?
To the parents, if you are caught with an illegal child, you will be fined a huge social compensation fee, and these fees are economically devastating to families. Or if you hide the child, which a lot of parents do, then that child will be an illegal child, and that child will not have something called huko. And huko is official existence. So with no huko, a child is not eligible for education, is not eligible for health care, can never officially work, can never officially marry, cannot travel, and has no official existence. So they're basically illegal aliens in their own country.
I want to make sure that everybody understood what you just said. The child who comes into the world through no fault or decision of his or her own then becomes marked, more or less, and not able to progress or enjoy life socially, can't go to school? Are you kidding? You got a little girl here or a little boy who's in the world and cannot be educated or cannot grow up and get married, has all kinds of restrictions on them. Could that be really enforced? Well, is it enforced?
What it is that these children are hidden, and nobody knows how many, what kind of a population there is that's been hidden in China. So there might be hundreds of thousands of these children that there's no official existence to these children at all. The government now that's moved to a two-child policy has encouraged people to register these children, but a lot of these children are second daughters, so that the families don't want to register them because they want to save that second registration for a boy. They want to continue to try to get pregnant. If they can have a second child, they're going to get pregnant and try for a boy. And that's where the sex selective abortion of baby girls comes in.
Not only with the second child, who happens to be a girl, but the first child too. If it's a girl, what happens?
Well, in China, the average between boys and girls is about 117 boys born for every 100 girls born. But what demographers have found is that in the countryside, where historically, if your first child is a boy, you can only have one child. If your first child is a girl, you can have a second child. What they have found is that couples are willing to let nature take its course and that the birth ratios are about normal for the first child. However, on the second child, which you've only been able to have if the first is a girl, the average is something like 140 boys born for every 100 girls born. And there are areas of China where there's 160 boys born for every 100 girls born, or even 190
That's
boys born.
That's a lot of death, isn't it?
And there's no way to account for this gender imbalance other than sex selective abortion.
Or abandonment after the little girl's born.
That's right. That's right. So they just will have the baby at home and she never gets counted because she gets...
There's only one word for all that, and it's sorrow. It's loss. It's grieving. It's pain.
That's right. And a lot of people ask, you know, how do Chinese women deal with this sorrow and loss and pain? And the answer is a very sad one, which is that China has the highest female suicide rate of any country in the world. In the vast majority of countries, more men than women kill themselves. In China, particularly in the Chinese countryside, it's something like 3 women for every man will kill themselves. And the way that they do it is through ingestion of pesticides, which is a really slow and painful way to go. So you can only imagine the mental anguish that these women are suffering in order to do that to themselves. And I believe that that self-destructive act, that depression that would lead to that suicidality, is not unrelated to forced abortion or also the pressure by the family to selectively abort their baby girl.
How did this cause, this passion, become front and center for you? You're a Caucasian. You're not an Asian. And you didn't go to law school with this in mind, although you have been a practicing attorney for many years. And yet you said in the beginning of this conversation that it's a calling for you, that the Lord communicated by whatever means that this is what he wanted you to devote your life to. Tell us about that.
Well, I was a complex commercial and intellectual property litigator in San Francisco and Silicon Valley for 7 or 8 years. And I also represented Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum in the United States. My first refugee was a woman who had been forcibly sterilized under the one-child policy. And I was shocked by this. This was the mid-90s. At that time, I knew that China had a one-child policy, but I did not know that it's currently enforced through forced abortion, forced sterilization, and even infanticide. And so what happened to her is that she had had 2 children, and they wanted to sterilize her. And this is very common in China, that after your second child, even if you were allowed to have that second child, they will sterilize you because they don't want you to try to have a third child, or they have quotas, like how many people you have to sterilize, how many people you have to abort in your area. So she had family planning police coming to her door daily to try to convince her to have a sterilization, but she refused because in her area, which was a village in China, other women who had been sterilized had ended up with horrible permanent physical disabilities.
Yeah, these are not, by Western standards, clean and competent medical procedures. This might be somebody with no training at all who comes in and bang, bang, does a sterilization procedure from which infections and everything else can occur.
When she refused to go voluntarily, they literally picked her up, dragged her out of her home, screaming and pleading, held her down to a table, cut her open, tied her fallopian tubes. She said it was so painful, it felt like somebody was blowtorching her inside. This was all done.
No anesthetic.
No anesthetic. And then sure enough, she ended up with a massive infection, similar to other women in her area. And at the time that I met her, she had chronic back pain, chronic abdominal pain, and chronic migraines, apparently for the rest of her life. So these sterilizations, they not only do they just ruin a woman's reproductive health, but they ruin a woman's general health as well. And I just remember sitting at my desk in San Francisco on a sunny day and reflecting on how wonderful my own life was, but at the same time that women on the other side of the earth were being dragged out of their homes, strapped onto tables, forced to abort babies that they wanted up to the 9th month of pregnancy. Sometimes these forced abortions were so violent that the women themselves died with their full-term babies. And I think that possibly because I had had 2 miscarriages prior to this, obviously, I had never suffered the violence of a forced abortion, but I knew what it meant to lose a child that you wanted. And so when I heard about this happening to these other women, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So that was sort of the first step on this road.
Yeah. And your own health played a role.
That's right. So in my mind, my life was planned out to become partner at this law firm and to live the life that you live as a partner in a law firm and to supervise junior attorneys doing asylum work. And that was not God's plan for me because I had to have bilateral mastectomies just because breast cancer runs in my family. So I had bilateral mastectomies with implant reconstruction, and that usually takes about 2 months off of work. But during the surgery, I had implanted deep into my body an antibiotic-resistant staph infection called the MRSA, the MRSA staph infection, which is, it can be fatal at times, and they were unable to control it. They did everything they could try to control it, but they couldn't. So they, I ended up in the hospital, and I had a PIC line, a peripheral intracardial catheter, inserted directly into my heart to have massive amounts of this really toxic antibiotic called vancomycin pumped directly into my heart. And I had that for almost 10 weeks, and it affected my liver, my kidneys, my immune system. My hair was coming out in handfuls. And I went overnight from being somebody who was a high-powered supervising attorney at a law firm to somebody who was flat on my back and just begging God to spare my life. And at that time, I said to him, Lord, if you let me live, I want my life to be worth something. I want to do something that furthers your kingdom. I want to help people in the world. So just break my heart for whatever breaks your heart. And I just became so brokenhearted and just couldn't stop thinking about, couldn't stop praying for the women and the babies of China who were being forcibly aborted at that moment.
How did you know about that?
I knew about it because of my asylum work, my previous asylum work.
Yeah. Had you been to China?
I have been to China, but it was before I started this work. Yeah. Now that I've started this work, I don't go to China anymore because basically everything I talk about is a state secret. The Chinese government denies that it forcibly aborts women, I document it and expose it. So it would not be wise for me to go to China at this time.
Yeah. But you knew enough to know this is a wrong, this is an evil, this is something that has to be opposed. Can you tell me why you think the more liberal women's movement would not also have a passion for this? Because it, and it goes to the heart of the value of women. Why is that apparently not something that they address themselves to?
Well, the women's movement, I think, is, or the liberal women's movement is, I think, kind of divided on this issue. There are some people who care about it. And so, for example, I was able to speak at the European Parliament, and I was invited in by the Obama White House to tell them about forced abortion in China. I also spoke at two events for Amnesty International in Hong Kong. But in general, the progressive or liberal women's movement has really abandoned this issue. And it makes no sense. I mean, if you're pro-choice, you should be jumping up and down to oppose forced abortion. If you're in favor of women's reproductive rights, you should be jumping up and down against forced sterilization. And yet they just turn a blind eye to all of this. And so what that makes me wonder, is their real agenda choice? Is their real agenda women's reproductive health? Or is their real agenda population control? And they're just willing to turn a blind eye to women who are being forcibly aborted and forcibly sterilized in China?
You know, there are other contradictions like this. I served on the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, which was one of the most difficult things I've done in my lifetime. And women are abused by pornography. I mean, the process of creating pornography often results in horrible things happening to women. And the magazines often show women being raped. And I won't even mention all of the things that occur, and women hanging in trees and all kinds of things. And we could not get the feminist movement excited about this.
Yeah, I find it incomprehensible. I don't understand why the feminist movement doesn't care about the abuse of women in the making of pornography. And I also listened to your interview of Ted Bundy, where he spoke very directly about how, because he had some kind of a psychological vulnerability, that pornography led him to do what he did. And obviously not everybody has that vulnerability, but there are enough people out there who do that we should not be pumping this stuff into society. It's dangerous for women. So I don't understand why the feminist movement doesn't care about this.
Well, what we do know is that the effort to protect women's rights, as it is described in the media and in the various movements, is very narrow. It does address certain very important abuses, but ignores others.
Well, I think that that was evident with this recent Women's March, where pro-life women's groups were eliminated. They were not allowed to participate. They were not allowed to be partners in the Women's March. So it wasn't really a Women's March. It was a pro-abortion, anti-Trump march is basically what it was. And any woman who disagreed with that was not allowed to be a partner in that march.
You were at the March for Life in January, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. What are your memories and recollections of that?
Well, I was actually a keynote speaker at the Walk for Life on the West Coast. And the greatest
50,000 women participated.
50,000 women participated in that. And my greatest recollection of that day was that my Chinese daughter, Annie, her birthday was the next day, and I got 50,000 people to sing her happy birthday. So that was
And that was on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade?
The day before the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. See, Annie was born on January 22nd, 2003, which was the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which is now Celebration of Life Day. And so we had everybody sing her happy birthday.
As a matter of fact, I want to do another program with you right on the heels of this to tell Annie's story.
Oh, good.
Because that's an inspiration in itself. We have a couple of minutes left. Put a ribbon on this program. What's the status of the effort to change the policy in China or to put pressure on the Chinese government to let women carry their babies to term? Is there any change occurring or is there any progress in that effort?
One thing that I find extremely encouraging is the fact that President Trump signed back into law the Mexico City policy. Because I have been writing about and advocating for years about the connection between UNFPA, the United Nations Family Planning Fund, and International Planned Parenthood, and the way that they've been working hand in hand with the Chinese Communist Party on their population control since the beginning, which makes them, in my opinion, complicit with forced abortion in China.
And population control for what cause? I mean, the nations throughout Europe and Asia and elsewhere are languishing because families don't want to have multiple children. And as a result, the population is dwindling. Well, why would even China? What's China's birth rate now?
Well, it depends on which statistic you look at. It's anywhere between 1.3 and 1.7, which is significantly below the 2.1 replacement level.
That won't even sustain a population.
No. And the thing is, there was a huge explosion of population under the Mao era, which is why Deng Xiaoping instituted the one-child policy. But that population explosion under the Mao era is now heading towards retirement, and they don't have the young population to sustain it. And that's why they moved from a one-child policy to a two-child policy. But I believe that all coercive population control in China and anywhere else in the world should be abolished.
So it makes no sense demographically.
Even under the expansion of the two-child policy, there was an article just last week saying that they have not seen the rebound in population that they were hoping for. So there's no reason whatsoever for them to continue any kind of population control program in China. It needs to be abolished.
We've been talking to Reggie Littlejohn about the passion of her life. And I have to tell you, I find you fascinating. And the work that you're doing is so significant from a spiritual point of view and with regard to the family. This affects the entire family.
Oh, absolutely.
And anytime you abandon the plan that God gave us, there are consequences that you can't even foresee. And China is now beginning to recognize they made a big mistake. But having a huge population, more than 30 million men who aren't married, coming into the older years of life and no family to take care of them. The government can't afford to take care of them. And it's a demographic nightmare. So here once again, we see the wisdom of the divine plan. Reggie, we're out of time. Let's talk about Annie tomorrow, shall we?
Yes, that sounds great.
And what What a powerful message from Reggie Littlejohn here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Her insight into the atrocities happening in China today are really eye-opening, and they should compel us to pray and to get more involved. If you want to know more about how you can get involved with the work that Reggie is doing to save baby girls in China, be sure to come back next time for the conclusion of this conversation. Now, by the way, you can visit her website, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org, to find out about the Save a Girl campaign. Again, that's womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. And we have a link for her site on our broadcast page as well. That is drjamesdobson.org. Also, if you've been blessed and inspired by today's message, would you please consider how you could start supporting the work of Family Talk financially? Your tax-deductible donations of any size enable us to bring the resources that you need to strengthen your family and to promote righteousness in the culture. You can donate securely online at drjamesdobson.org or call us anytime with your donation over the phone, 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for praying for us, and thanks so much for standing with us financially, especially at this time of year. I'm Roger Marsh, reminding you to come back again next time for the conclusion of this compelling conversation right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.